Hey everyone, welcome to the 60th episode of Baseline Intelligence, the podcast designed to make you a better tennis player and a smarter athlete. I'm your host, Jonathan Stokey. Today's guest is Michael Joyce. Michael is one of the premier WTA coaches as he's worked with Jessica Pegula, Maria Sharapova, Victoria Azarenka, and is currently working with up-and-coming American Ashlyn Kruger. On today's episode, we discuss adapting to different playing conditions, when to go down the line, and why hitting deep is so important. So sit back, relax, and prepare to become a smarter tennis player. All right, Michael, welcome to the pod.
Great to be back.
Yeah, you are, some people have already messaged me saying they want to be a two-time guest, but you are in rarefied air now. You're one of the few career achievement for you. But you were nice enough to come on. You are currently in Doha, which is several hours ahead of me. And you're there with Ashlyn Kruger, who you're working with full time, and she just lost a tough three-set match to Paula Badosa. So I was wondering if you could just walk us through your experience in a tour match like that, what it's like, how that match went. I think there were some interesting circumstances with a postponement. So just kind of break that match down for us.
Yeah, it was a tough day today. She lost a real tight match that started yesterday, actually. This year, we were joking, this year there's been a lot of rain delays. She had beginning of the year in Brisbane, she had a match that went over 2 days. Adelaide had some rain, so I don't know if it's following us or it's just the tour, but it's supposed to not rain here even. But actually, she qualified, so she had to play Friday and Saturday, won two matches to get it, and played Paula Badosa, who was number two a couple years ago and had some injuries, and she's coming back, but she's a very good player. And they started last night pretty late, around 8 o'clock. It was cold, slow conditions. The courts here are a lot slower than last week. She played a tournament in Abu Dhabi last week, the courts were a lot quicker. It was a great match. Ashlyn had her chances in the first set. She was actually up 3-2, had about three or four break points that didn't go her way. And then she lost a little bit of momentum. Lost the set 6-3. Second set, she was down, I think she was down 3-2 and saved three or four break points. And then she kind of took the momentum and won the set 6-4. And then in the third set, she was actually down 4-1, held serve at 4-1, was up 15-40, and it started raining around 11:15 last night. And then they kind of, the tour kind of looks at the forecast. They kind of see if it was a quick rain and it was going to stop and they could get back on in 15-20 minutes, they probably would have kept it, but the rain was pretty settled in, so they had us come back today at 2:30. They start the matches here really late for some reason, like the stadium court typically starts at 3:30 in the afternoon. They'll be playing probably, there's two or three more matches left today to play. That's already 9 o'clock at night, so they play very late. She came out today, broke serve right away and got back to 4-all and had a tough game at 4-all, and then unfortunately lost her serve at 4-5. But you know, it's those rain delay matches are always tough. You know, also Badosa has a lot of experience. Ashlyn's playing better and better. She's getting better, I think, every week. She's also getting a chance now to play a lot of top 10 players. Badosa's rankings dropped, but she was two a couple years ago, and last week she played Kastakina, who's ranked 12, and Australia she played Quinn Win Jang, who got to the finals. So she's starting to play these big players, and she's very close. You know, a couple points here or there seem to make the difference. I think that's one thing that playing these top players that she needs to improve a little bit is just the focus of playing every point to her ability. Sometimes, you know, when you play players ranked a little below you, they give you maybe not serve great for 2 points and get back in the game, or maybe can miss a couple of returns and then all of a sudden come back or get down a break. But I feel like right now it's a matter of her playing her game and her strengths and really doing it point after point for a full two and a half hours. Because when you look back at a lot of these matches, you can pretty much go back to 3-4 points that really made the difference in the whole set. Love the way she's playing. She's playing her game the way she should. She's fighting hard, and I think at her age, at 19, playing these top players as close as she is, it's going to just keep giving her confidence. A lot of the players she's playing that are 50, 60, 70 in the world, she's getting starting to beat those players pretty consistently. So that's all part of the process of, you know, hopefully rising to the top.
One thing I want to circle back to, you were just saying, I believe you just came from Abu Dhabi, that's right?
Yes, Abu Dhabi was last week.
Yeah. Right. So you were talking about how Doha, I can't remember if it's faster or slower, but basically the conditions are different. So as a player, how do you help that player? Let's say, was Doha faster or slower?
Yeah, so this week is very slow.
Right. So when you go to slower conditions, what are some things that you do? You play on a slower, grittier hard court. What can a player do to adjust to that situation?
Yeah, well, the surface is huge. The balls are big. I mean, we've been hearing a lot about switching balls. Lucky enough, these tournaments are using Australian Open balls. So beginning of this year has been pretty good between Australia, Abu Dhabi so far, Doha. I think Dubai next week, they're using the Australian Open ball. So that's one thing. The balls are very fast at the beginning. And then after a couple games, they get roughed up huge. And so with Ashton, she's played now with these balls probably 15 matches, and so we have a little bit of like a solution, like she gets a few more rackets strong, so like with the new balls are quicker and they're like little pellets, usually she goes to a little tighter racket, and then sometimes when the balls start to fluff up, she'll go a little bit looser. Last week in Abu Dhabi, she played a few matches, three matches on the outside courts, which were really fast, and then the center court when she played Castakina was slower. You know, so that's tournaments. A lot of times the center court is different than the outside courts. That's part of, as you get more experienced, you start to realize right away, like, okay, this court's a little bit slower. You know, maybe I'm going to have to, you know, think about hitting a little bit more depth, maybe a little higher over the net at times, maybe racket a little bit looser. I think you just have to, when the court's a little bit quicker, maybe even on the return, you got to be a little bit shorter swing, small adjustments, or at least to be mindful about it without big changes. But I think the quicker you can adjust, I mean, I know players are complaining. They've been playing Abu Dhabi. I mean, even yesterday, I think Castakina lost in the finals, and then she had to come here today and play right away because this is a bigger draw and she didn't have a bye. I saw she lost right away today. So a lot of times it takes like a day to get used to it. Just the speed of the court. Obviously, little things where the court's a little bit slower, the ball's going to sit a little bit more. So you have to be more mindful of maybe stepping up to the ball a little bit. Like I said, maybe a little extra topspin, a little extra depth is important. Ashton played her first round of qualies on Friday. She practiced on Thursday. We got here Wednesday night. We had a light practice on Thursday. You can kind of see the court slower. When she played her match, her mentality was a little bit like Abu Dhabi, like ripping balls, you know, a little bit. And, you know, throughout the match, she made some adjustments, started to think a little bit more depth, use angles a little more, little things like that. I mean, especially at this level, I think it makes a big difference. Some players can adjust quicker than others. It's just interesting to me because that's part of, I think, as a coach, letting the player make an adjustment and quick, because I know players growing up, I mean, we've all done it a little bit where you want to, you know, the juniors, this is really important for them to hear because a lot of times you want to get used to the court. I've had players, oh, I want to get a rhythm. I want to get used to the court. I want to, you know, I think that's why clay court, growing up on clay is really good because as a young kid, you have to adjust quick. I mean, you could be playing on a dry clay court and all of a sudden it rains and it's totally different. I remember Maria playing at the French Open, playing a match where it's like hot and fast, and then all of a sudden it rained for an hour, and then it's like a totally different match when you come out. And so, of course, you're not going to change your game, but you have to be mindful of it. You have to make maybe small adjustments, little things. Obviously, some things work better on faster courts than slower courts. And so, depending on your style of game, how you adjust to that, I think makes a big difference over a period of time. And so as a coach, I think it's good to kind of help your player kind of think what works for them, because what would work for Ashton might not work for Lauren Davis or something. You know, everybody's different.
Right. I think there's always this assumption that things are supposed to be fair. So,
you know, right.
If I was playing you and it was zero humidity, 80 degrees and fast courts, I'm like, I'm in business right now. Like I like that. And then, like you said, it might rain and you come back the next morning and there was a temperature drop and now it's heavy, cold, and slower. And I'm like, well, that doesn't really suit my serve and volley game. At the end of the day, you've just got to figure it out. So some people will get these situations and, oh, you know, the clay was wet and I'm this type of player and that's why I lost. And it's like, there are little things you can do to tweak. And sometimes it favors you. Sometimes it favors your opponent. Sometimes you'll get different conditions in the match. But I feel like that can be a crutch for people. Instead of trying to solve the problem, they just kind of complain that, but this isn't suitable for my best game, if that makes sense.
Sure. Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think also when you look at a schedule, you try to make a pretty good schedule for yourself, like where you probably play well. You know, a lot of times players will win an event or they'll do well somewhere and then they go back the following year and they do well right again. I mean, a lot of it is maybe the conditions suit their game, but also a lot of it is they probably feel good there and they've played well there. But I mean, that's just, you got to look at it as kind of fun in a way. I mean, it's a game you're playing, you know, you could, of course you want to win, you want to, but like ultimately as humans, when we're young, we like things to be hard, right? I think as we get older, we want everything kind of easier. So, you know, if you kind of look at it like as a challenge, like, okay, it's, you know, the court's a little heavier today. I'm going to have to be a little more patient. I'm going to have to work, you know, if you look at it like that, I think that's where you can get the best out of it instead of making, I mean, at the end of the day, when they look at like record books or they say, oh, this person won the tournament, like Nadal won what, 12 French Opens. I'm sure the clay was different all the time. They don't say, oh, well, yeah, he lost that year because the court was slow or rain. You know, I mean, they might say it nowadays, but ultimately he found a way to win all the time. So, and I think it's good for coaches when the kids are young to not always make it easy for them, because you're actually doing, if the kid feels great, I mean, most of the players I work with that are good, I'm always like, well, if you feel great and you're playing great and you love the way the girl hits the ball to you, all that stuff, we're probably not going to have to worry about you losing that day. So let's not, you know, so, you know, the days where you're struggling a little bit, where conditions are tough, I mean, the ones that can get through that are going to be the champions ultimately.
One drill my coach did with me, and of course I hated it at the time, but in hindsight, I know it was great, is he ran us like crazy. We were exhausted. And then he put everybody's rackets in a pile and just started pulling rackets out and like, Stokey, you get to use this racket. Okay. It's a Babolat strung at 45 and you use a Wilson strung at 60. Okay. And you're going to go play this other dude and you're tired and you're using someone else's racket and you guys are playing for more sprints.
Right.
And figure it out.
It's
find
great.
A way to put the ball in play. And then when you get back with your racket, you're like, damn, this is easy. And wow, I'm really going to complain because the wind is 5 miles an hour too strong or the court is slightly slower than I want. You're like, I can handle this. It's not a big deal.
Right. It's true. It's true. Yeah, no, it's such a big, and as I think a good coach can help you get better at that. You know, I mean, when I was, Landsdorp was probably king of that, which then made my dad, like, he was like, no, you know, you got out there, you had an hour left. No excuses, you know. I mean, if you racket this or that or string, I mean, you know how many players get a racket strung and they miss the ball and look at the racket, the string. I mean, you got to be kidding. I mean, I hit with a racket that was strung 6 months ago. I mean, if my player needs me to make the ball, I'm going to figure out how to make the ball. Like, but as a player, those are all the pressure makes the players focus on that stuff. And you can always find something. I mean, every player can find something. And ultimately, it's not easy. Nobody said it was easy. We've all done it. But ultimately, the ones who are able to get through that are going to have a much better chance of coming out on top.
So I want to talk a little bit about baseline play. It's obviously a huge part of most matches, recreational or pro. And at the women's level, there's some insanely good ball striking on ground strokes. Generally speaking, is there an attribute of the ground stroke that you find, just personally for you, that you have an affinity for? Is it depth? Is it pace? Is it spin? Is it location? What do you value in like a quality rally ball?
I mean, for me, I think depth is important for everything in general. I mean, obviously, unless you're trying to pull the person off the court with an angle. I mean, even if you hit flatter, if you hit more pace, if you hit more spin, ultimately, depth keeps your opponent at bay. Plus, it opens doors for you to be aggressive if you want take. So usually if my players are hitting short, even if they feel like they're hitting well, they're usually getting pushed around or they're not opening as many doors. So I think that's big for everybody. because obviously everybody hits the ball different. A lot of people are hitting. The men tend to hit the ball a lot more spin. Like these days, you can see partly with their strength and with the rackets and strings, you see a lot of, you know, heavy spin balls. And, you know, I think in some ways that's maybe stopped a little bit of the men from even being able to put away shorter balls or come in or return as well. Like, I don't think the players return as well, except for the top, you know, Djokovic. And I don't think the average good male player returns that well anymore. But then they get more out of their serve. They can take a ball and, you know, rip it off the court. And women's tennis a little bit different. I think they don't have the strength in a lot of ways to create as much rotation. Some of them do it well. I mean, you see strong girls now that do that well, but I think it's a little tougher. If you take everybody in general, they're not going to create as much racket speed because of the strength. So I think the depth is super important. I think one thing in women's tennis that the girls that can change the pace, or you could say, or trajectory of the ball. I mean, a girl like Castakina does that well. She doesn't have like the, not hitting the ball huge, but she, you know, she can hit a forehand big when she has time. But at the same time, Castakina can, like, she changes the, some balls are heavy high. Some are, she uses a slice well. A lot of girls that are good players, but somewhat average, hit the same ball a lot, you know, kind of flat or drive. And if they have that ball at them, they hit it really well. But, you know, once they start to run into some of these players who can change a lot of the speed and spin, they struggle with. So for me, I think the depth, and I think being able to do it over and over, you know, concentration of being able to, I mean, some of the players that I've had who you would think are maybe like two ball hitters or big, you know, Maria, like they'd say, oh, she, you know, winning the point quick or whatever. Or even Jessie hits such a hard, solid ball. She can win points pretty quick, but she also can hit the ball in the same spot every time, like 50 times. Or Ashlyn, if you tell her to hit downline backhand, if she's playing well and feeling good, she can hit that ball over and over and over. It matches, maybe it doesn't show up as much because she's trying to, in a lot of ways, win the point pretty quick, because I think it's been proven that most of the points, over 50% of points, are won and lost in four balls. So, you know, the 1-2 combination, a good big return, a big hitter, come to the net, you have those abilities that the points are usually going to be quicker. But I think you have to have that consistency. You got to be able to hit that depth. You got to be able to do it over and over. And that is what creates the opportunity to win points quicker, if that makes sense.
So when we're talking about depth, I mean, I'm curious at the pro level, what you see. I know what I experience as a player now, which is if I want to hit the ball deep and I'm hitting with any level of pace, medium speed or faster, if I hit like 2 feet over the net, the ball is guaranteed to go deep. I mean, it's actually really hard for me to get that ball to drop inside the service box.
Right.
And so it's like that mix of the pace, but also the height. And everyone's always reluctant to hit high over the net, which, you know, for them, they think 3 feet is like a mountain. But if you hit 2 to 3 feet over the net with decent speed, I challenge people to get that ball to drop in the service box. It's actually really difficult to do.
Well, I'll tell you a really interesting story. It's a good point. So Maria, when I was coaching Maria, when I first started working with her, the first like 6 months of tournaments, they were all like indoors or hard court or whatever. And, you know, obviously depth was important, whatever, but we didn't talk much about spin or anything like that. And then I remember going to the clay. We went to actually Spain, and we were going to train in Spain for 2 or 3 weeks and then getting into the clay court tournaments. And it was funny. The first day I got there, just kind of out of like habit or whatever, I was like, oh, okay, we're on clay. And I was hitting a lot then. I'm okay, let's hit a little bit more spin, a little bit more depth. And then she started like hitting more spin, but started like pushing. And like, you know, a little bit, it was higher over the net, but it was almost like a push, like, and I was like, what are you doing? You know, she's like, well, you told me to hit more spin and this and that. And I was like, and I realized right away, like spin to her was basically like playing defensive or pushing, which then changed her whole mentality of even she started standing farther back. Like, and then I realized right away, I can't use that term spin with her. So what I did is exactly like I put like a target over the net, like a couple feet, not like way up there, but just, you know, 2-3 feet. And then, you know, right away, like she started to use a little bit more spin and the ball started to go deeper. And so it got to the point where when she would go on clay, it was just like, okay, you're on clay. Your normal drive is you're just going to be a little bit more thoughtful of getting maybe, like you said, 2 feet over the net or something. And that for her made her hit a little bit more spin, made her hit depth. You know, that's where nowadays everybody's different. And that's where you have to know your player and know what works for them, because some players I've worked with is totally opposite. Like when they start to hit more spin, they actually hitting faster, heavier, like can drive, you know, they better racket speed because the spin is like a friend for them. But like for her, it didn't work, or, you know, and so Jesse hits pretty flat. So Sam, I like to put that stick with the can, and like, you know, if you hit a foot over the net, it's going to be a hard, great shot, but it's landing maybe 3 feet behind the service line. But you hit the exact same drive, but a foot higher, then all of a sudden it's 3 feet from the baseline. It's the exact same shot, but you're just right. It's just where you're aiming the ball. I think that's super important. And again, everybody's different. But that works really, really well.
It's funny. We have a lot of like good state level players at our club. And the drill we warmed up with the other day, and this is something I used to think about as a player myself, was we have scoreboards that are about 3 feet over the net. And so we said, here's what you're going to do in the warm-up. You're going to swing as fast as you can. Like once they got loose, max racket speed. You have to hit it over the scoreboard. So that means it's going to be at least 3 feet over. And I want you to see if you can get the ball to bounce exactly on the service line.
Oh, right.
And so they're ripping and they keep hitting balls that are like 4 feet from the baseline. And they're like, I can't do it. I can't do it. And I'm like, do you think I actually want you to hit on the service line? Or do you think I want you to get the feel for what a really good rally ground strike? I'm like, do you realize how hard it is to hit short when you have that racket speed and that height? And I think for some of them, the light bulb actually went off and some of them just thought they failed at the drill. But it's actually so difficult to do. And like you said, I've noticed certain words with players. Here are my two examples. You said Maria heard spin and thought push. If I tell a club level doubles player, give up your doubles alley, what they hear is give up your line. And I'm like, those are different. And then the other thing is if you tell a player, take the ball on the rise, what they hear is attack. And I'm just like, hey, I just want you to take the ball when it's bouncing on the way up.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Well, you can do the opposite with somebody that hits like a heavy spin. I've done a few, like a lot of the players, especially kids and stuff now, they'll hit so much spin that they can't drive the ball. So I'll be like, I want you to hit the top of the net, like just rip it, hit the top of the net as many times as you can. And they don't do it. Like they're trying to hit the top of the net and they're actually start ripping the ball and they never really hit the net. It's the fun. And they're like, I can't hit the net. I can't. I'm like, well, now you know what it feels like to drive the ball. And they're like, oh yeah, I'm hitting the ball pretty hard. Right. So it's like, it's, but as a coach too, you can pretty much, I figured out you can pretty much find a drill to get somebody to start doing what you want without them even realizing they're doing it. Because that's sometimes like the thought of hitting spin for Maria didn't work. But if you did a drill where she was forced to hit spin, you know, if she's hitting 3 feet over the net and she's hitting it flat as hard as she can, the ball's going to go on the fence. So eventually she's going to adjust and then you're like, okay. And then they're doing what you want them to do without them overthinking it. I think there's drills for everything like that.
So we're talking about depth and, you know, there's tons of ways you can make people miss, hitting deep, hitting fast, like we said, hitting tons of spin, mixing up the height. One thing players tend to do a lot is change directions. And so that's something they just feel like they need to do. I for no reason, sometimes just because they've hit two balls cross and nothing's happened. Do you have any general rules for when you should change directions or how you should change directions?
Yeah, I do actually. Again, everybody's different. Some players, I mean, one thing I talked to Andy Murray a long time ago and I asked him a question because I was really curious about this. And I was like, when you're in a rally, especially with like top player Djokovic or whatever, I'm like, besides your serve, which you have complete control over. And a lot of times if you hit a good serve, you might get a ball that you can control, right? So you can pretty much go where you want. But when you start getting longer rallies and the rally starts going, I find that a lot of girls I work with mostly girls. So I find that a lot of times they, like you said, they'll change down the line or they'll go for a shot and you kind of sitting there going, well, why'd you do that? And they don't really know why they did it. They might just think I have a good downline backhand. So I better win the point with a downline backhand. Now, what I find is, you know, they'll play a match where they play somebody where they can kind of change direction when they want. And so they play well. And then all of a sudden the next day they'll play somebody who's given them a ball they don't like, or the ball's not quite in their zone. And then they start making errors because they're going for the lower percentage shot. So anyway, back to Andy. So I asked him, I said, when you're playing these points and stuff, like, are you hitting what you want to hit always, or are you hitting kind of like based on what Djokovic or somebody gives you? And he said, well, you got to hit the ball that you can make and hit, right? And so he's like, so, you know, and I was like, yeah, that's always how I thought and how I play. And then I realized that a lot of the girls I was coaching, they made it in their mind what they wanted to do, and they're going to stick with it till they hit cross court backhand, the girl hits back to them and they want to change down the line, they're going to change down the line, even if the ball's deep, if it's high, if it's out of their zone. And that's usually when errors happen. And so I think a lot of it is how you practice. I love the drills a lot of times where, you know, you go 2-3 cross and then one changes line or whatever. I like 2-on-1s a lot of times where you know, you want them to be aggressive. You want them to hit, but you also have to make 10, 12 in a row. So I think that has a lot to do with it. If somebody tells you there's a lot of playing in the United States, especially with the young kids, where they just get balls fed to them all the time and there's no repercussion for missing. And so they're just hitting balls. I think I learned good shot selection partly because Landsdorp would make it like if you hit it, if you missed, it was like a cardinal sin, but you also had to hit. So, you know, you're not pushing, but you got it. So if you have a forehand and you're going to rip it and you know that cross court is going to be a higher percentage, then you're going to do that most of the time, right? And so I think a lot of it is the mentality and the drills, and you also start to figure out where the ball is on the court and what you can go for, and you know, what even if you're using the middle of the court, whatever, you're hitting the ball with a purpose, but you're also choosing probably the right shot selection. That's basically what it comes down to.
The funny thing for me, you said like hit a ball that you know you can make, right? And so I always say, like, if we fed a ball and it was for $1 million, I would hit it incredibly slow because I know 1,000 times out of 1,000 I'll make that. If you told me I have to make 5 balls in a row, I probably hit faster than that, knowing I only have to make 5 versus if I had to make 50 in a row, you know? And so that skill of knowing what you can make is kind of, I mean, I think a lot of people don't know. So I always laugh because my players will always say I had it right after they didn't have it.
Yes, that's right.
Like, they never said they had it after they hit the winner. They're like, oh man, I had that backhand and I can't help myself. I'm like, just for the record, you didn't. Like, you hit in the net, right, buddy. You know? Right. And so that's still, well, like, you always think you're going to make it, obviously, or otherwise you wouldn't have tried it. But a lot of times you end up missing that shot.
Exactly. You know, and I think that's also, again, everybody's different. Everybody's skill level is different. Everybody has favorite shots, whatever. But I think that's also learning how to play to your ability and your game. I mean, I remember Jesse going to the first tournament with Jesse, and I only known her for like 5 or 6 days. And I'd just been working with Maria. So Jesse was like 16, just about 17. And I took her to this tournament. It was 25K qualifying. And first round, she played this girl. I'll never forget this match. She played this girl, and the girl, like some Russian girl, some, the girl came out and like hit with her the first set, like ripping balls at her. And Jesse must have hit like 15 downline winner backhands and won the set 6-0. And I was like, geez, this girl's like unbelievable. Next set, the girl decided to like moonball her on every single ball. Jesse proceeded to miss every single ball, lose 6-0. Like going for the same shots from like 10 feet behind the baseline, you know, running in the fence, trying to hit like down, lose 6-0. Then I'm like, oh, this is okay. And then the girl went up like 3-0. Then the girl decided to start hitting again. And then Jesse came back to like 5-3. Then the girl it went back and forth until Jesse ended up winning like 13-11 in the tiebreaker. And it was all depending on what the girl was hitting to her. That was the funniest thing. And then I talked to her a little bit after, and she's like, oh yeah, my downline backhand's my best shot, but it like comes and goes, you know? And I was like, oh, well, I mean, maybe it comes and goes based on like what you're getting, you know? And she didn't really understand. And then the next day she played a girl that hit really good, and she played like, again, unreal, one easy. And then the next day played like a pusher, this or that, and missed every ball. And like, it took time for her to learn how to use like her weapons, you know, and when to do it. And when, you know, that's also why footwork and the, is so important, because obviously if you have better footwork and you get in position better, then you can probably go for more, or you can go for, you know, if you have bad footwork or people get nervous, then you probably have to use a little bit more cross court or middle. You can't go for that as much. So all of that has to do with how you feel, how your opponent hits, all those things. And that's part of making the right choices as a player, based on your court position, your shot selection. All that is super important, especially as you get better, which makes tennis really interesting.
We're running a little short on time, so we're going to get in these Instagram questions. This person has a familiar issue that a lot of people out there have, and they say they play awesome in lessons or practice, and then they play less than ideal in a match. What is your best advice for taking your practice game, assuming that's your full level, to the match court?
Yeah, I mean, I think all players have that to an extent. I think, I think in practice, your anxiety level is much lower. I mean, obviously, in a match, it counts all of a sudden. So, you can practice till you're blue in the face and you could feel great. And then all of a sudden, you put yourself on the line, no matter what your level is. Now, all of a sudden, everything counts. So, of course, your heart rate's going to go up, your body's going to get tighter, all of these things. So you have to accept the fact that your body's not the same as when you're just out practicing, no matter any way you look at it. And so I think that's why playing a lot of matches is important. I think that's why players and kids and juniors that try to avoid putting themselves in those situations, I actually think are doing a disservice for themselves, because no matter how hard you train, no matter how hard you practice, it's never the same feeling you have when you go into a match. And so if you're having problems with that, I say, put yourself in pressure situations as much as possible. Even if it's tough at first, I think over time, you're going to learn how to handle it better, and be patient with it. Because I've seen players who struggle like crazy in matches, practice great, and the more they played matches, the more they put themselves in tournaments. It's only way you can do it. I mean, I know that you have the ability to hit the ball well, play well. So you have the ability to do it, but you have to try to bring it over to a match. And that's a skill all it's in its own. And the only way you're going to get better at that is to do that and practice in a match, because practice is practice and a match is a match.
I found I was my most relaxed if I went, like, I know some people can't do this, but I'd play like four tournaments in a row. And so I played like 20 matches in a month. And by like the 10th match, I'm like, okay, like it's just a match. When you haven't played for 2 months, you'd like put it on this pedestal. Oh my God, I got to play well. I've got this thing. But if it just becomes part of your normal routine, it's pretty easy to be relaxed, because it's just another day.
That's why you see, again, like what I said, you see people get on a roll and start winning. I mean, you almost get this mindset when you're winning a lot. I remember, like, same like me, when I used to play these satellite circuits, you start winning so much that you still care, but if you lose, it's not a big deal. It's almost like I've heard people go, oh, I almost want to lose so I can get a break. But then you kind of don't want to lose, but then you have that mentality. So you kind of go out there and it's kind of like F it kind of. And you're always going to play better than like that. And I had a sports psychologist when I was younger, and he told me, like, baseball players, that's what happens. Like, when they get in a hitting streak, they're hitting so much, because in baseball, if you're hitting like 350 or something, you're great, right? So, you're hitting below 500, but if you're getting hits every game, every time you go up to hit, you kind of expect not to get a hit. So then you get a hit, but then all of a sudden you get in a slump, or you start struggling and you're like 15 games in, you don't have a hit. You get up there and you want to hit so bad, it's not going to happen. So you can kind of, that really stuck with me, because I was like, wow, I go play these matches, especially what a lot of players do, they'll work really hard, or they take like a training block 2 months, and they're, physically training, they're coming out like a new player, blah, 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 working on this, you're practicing great. Now all of a sudden you go in the match and now everything's on display. So you want it to work so well. And usually when you want something really bad, it's toughest to get always. So, that balance is super important.
And last question, as always, reminder that a 4-0 is like basically a strong, solid adult player. What is your best advice for the 4-0 amateur player?
I think, if you love tennis, obviously if you're a strong adult player and you're playing, I think you love tennis. I think it's important to keep improving. I think you want to get better. I think it's really important to work on your strengths. You know, everybody always is thinking about how to make their weaknesses better, which obviously is, we want to do that, but don't forget about why you're good, you know, at any level. I mean, if you're a strong 4-0 player and you have a big serve and you're winning points at the net, you know, but your ground strokes are shady, you know, you don't want to spend so much time worrying about your ground strokes that you don't make your strengths better, because a lot of times we all have strengths or capabilities, and a lot of times those can get better and better, and which will make you ultimately a much better player than always focusing so much on the weaknesses. I mean, that's something even at pros, if you can master a few parts of your game, you're going to get better and better, and it's going to also help your confidence. It's going to help your identity as a player. So work on those strengths just as much as the weaknesses.
And for those of you listening that, you know, want to work with Michael, where could they find you? I know you coach some people remotely online. Do you have like a website or a forum that people can find you to coach?
Yeah, I have a website. It's kind of a work in progress, but it's michaeljoycetennis.com. And what I found is last year I broke my leg. I had a terrible injury. I broke my leg given a lesson, and I was hung up on the couch for about 4 months and on crutches. And I had some players that I had worked with when I was younger, when they were younger, and some of them went to college and stuff. And it helped that I was able to see some of their videos, like matches. And so I find that I love doing it because I have the time to do it. And, so you can actually go through my website, or you can even, go through Instagram or whatever, find me on there, Facebook, people reach out to me on all those things. But, you know, it's, I find that when I watch some of the matches, it really helps give them a different kind of idea of what they need to work on or train. And I can talk to them through Zoom or their coaches and give them a lot of feedback and then see them again, like a couple weeks down the line. And it's kind of a fun thing to do now that we have the technology to do it.
All right. Well, thanks again for the time, and good luck to you and Ashlyn this year.
Well, you're doing great stuff. I love watching your stuff. That's why you're really, really good, really good.
It's always great to talk to Michael. And if you enjoyed his insights, you can subscribe to the bonus episodes feature on Apple and listen to his bonus episode where he gave some awesome tips on how to play important points and how to beat pushers. My favorite takeaway from today's episode was when he spoke about adapting to different surfaces and courts. Many of you out there play at different clubs all the time, and the surfaces and conditions change constantly. You can't just play the same way every day at every different venue. You need to adapt to the conditions on that particular day to play your best tennis. If you haven't already, it would mean a lot to me if you could leave a rating and review, as it helps the show continue to grow and reach more players and new coaches. Thanks again for listening. I hope you just improved at tennis without even hitting a ball.